Judas Iscariot. Have you ever thought about how you want your name to be remembered? Betrayer, traitor, Satan. These are the words that will follow my name, the bad guy, the villain of the story. But you have to know, you need to know, this is not what I wanted. This was not my hope, not the ending I imagined when all of this started. These words, they aren't the whole story of me. They can't be my whole story. I'm one of the 12. Well, I was anyway. 12 of us, this ragtag group chosen by Jesus to follow him, to learn from him, to be his disciples. We weren't disciple material. I know I wasn't. Not really. James and John and Andrew and Simon, I mean they were fishermen. And Matthew, who joined us a little later, he was a tax collector. Right? We weren't disciple material. We weren't from like special families or educated in any remarkable way. We were just guys. And yet this rabbi, Jesus, he invited us to follow him. You have to know, Jesus is remarkable. One of the first things that some of this group witnessed, some of us witnessed, was to see him turning water into wine at a wedding. Who can do that? And it wasn't cheap wine, by the way. And then that day on the Mount, Jesus had been teaching all day. His teaching, it like opened this whole new way of thinking. And then people just kept coming up to him to ask for healing. And evening came, and we were really tired, and we went up to him and said, you know, let's just send everybody home. Frankly, there wasn't going to be enough food for everyone, and it was already past dinner time. But Jesus, he looked at us and said, feed these people. They're hungry. Those probably weren't his exact words, but that's the gist of what he said. And I'm sure all of us, we just looked incredulous. It's like, how are we going to feed? Like, there are thousands of people here, Jesus. We didn't have that kind of food. We didn't have the money to go and buy it. This was not going to happen. That's why we wanted to send the people home, into their own villages. But Jesus, he looked at us with that look he always gave us when we didn't quite trust him or when we doubted. That look. It was a mix of care and compassion on one hand and frustration on the other, maybe. He told us to gather what we had, 5 loaves and 2 fish. That's what we came up with. 5 loaves and 2 fish, and we were going to feed 5,000 people. Yeah, right. And he took what we had, and then he blessed it. He said this prayer as though we were about to have this big meal with everybody, like it's going to be great and everybody will be happy and fed. And then Jesus fed everyone. Actually, that's not quite right. He had us feed everyone. And then we picked up the leftovers. Yeah, I said leftovers. 12 baskets full of leftovers. No one can do something like that without God's power, God's blessing. Jesus, he brought the power of God wherever he went. Not long after that, he sent us out. He said he was giving us the authority to drive out spirits like he did, to heal disease and sickness like we'd watched him do. Like, I know we were thinking, what gave him this authority? Was he the Messiah, the chosen one of God? I think we'd begun to believe. He said, wherever we went, we should start by saying, the kingdom of heaven has drawn near. Simon went with me. Not Simon, Peter, the other Simon. Some call him Simon the Zealot, Simon the Canaanite. I remember the first village we came to. We were welcomed into a home, a little bit surprised by that, and we shared what Jesus told us, and the people, they seemed a little skeptical, but they should have. Like, we were trying to figure this out on ourselves. We said what Jesus said to say, that the kingdom of heaven has come near, and I can't blame them for not being sure, because I'm not sure we said it with a whole lot of confidence. I was shaking then when a tormented young man was brought to us. Could we really do this? Like, could we really heal someone? Simon and I, we laid hands on him just as we'd seen Jesus do, and we prayed, and sure enough, like he was healed. When we returned to Jesus, we weren't the only ones who'd had this power of God at work in and through us, all because of Jesus. Oh, I remember Jesus, he was so full of joy that day. We all were. The world, it was transforming right before our very eyes. But trouble was brewing, even then. There were some who doubted and some who were so stirred up and wanted to challenge Jesus, particularly for those who were aligned with the Roman Empire. Like, Jesus was a threat. He had this power to stir up the people. People wanted to be around him, wanted to follow him. The murmurs were starting to spread that he might be the Messiah. Our deliverance was coming. We were asking, could this be the fall of the Roman occupation? There's excitement in the air. Some of us wanted nothing more than for that to happen, to be free again. I remember the day Jesus was teaching, and some heard him say that he was the bread of life, and they walked away. Like, he turned to us then, and he said to us, "Do you want to go too?" And Peter spoke up for us. He said, "No. No, where would we go? We have come to believe that you are the Holy One of God." And then Jesus affirmed that he'd chosen us. Then he said something curious. He said, "But one of you is a devil. Me." I had no idea then. Me. It would be me. You know, life was hard. The Roman Empire, essentially, they owned everything and they taxed you so that they could keep up their lifestyle in Rome. And what they didn't take, Herod took locally to build monuments to himself. And what Herod didn't take, the tax collectors would take for themselves. Right? You couldn't get ahead. You were lucky to keep food on your table. You were always at the mercy of the empire and the local leadership and representatives of that empire. And if you looked at them funny, you could be beaten and harassed in the public spaces. It was painful living. And then Jesus came, and suddenly there was something to live for, this possibility that God was going to do something. The crowds grew, and Jesus gave us these signs that indeed the kingdom of heaven was near. It was right here in Jesus. We were so excited. I was so excited. But do you ever find yourself, like, impatient? You're waiting on the world to change, and it's just not happening fast enough. Or have you ever been so passionate about one you want to happen that you can't see any other way but the way that you have thought about to get there? Jesus had followers and this immense power, the power of God at his fingertips. All he had to do was say the word, and we would have taken up arms and raised an army and helped him to become king. But suddenly Jesus was talking about death. And we didn't understand. I didn't understand. He had the power of God on his side. If he was the Messiah, God would, would protect him. We would have protected him. All that power. And it seemed he just wanted to use it to show people who he was, to heal people. And that's okay, but his power, that power could rule the world. We were at a dinner in Bethany one evening, and Mary and Martha and Lazarus, his friends, and Mary comes up to Jesus, and she pours this entire jar of perfume over his feet, and then she cleaned them with her hair. I was appalled. Jesus should have said something. He shouldn't have allowed this to happen. That perfume alone could have propped up our movement, could have been used for the poor, for our efforts. It was a year's worth of wages that she just poured out over his feet. Like, how did he allow this to happen? Why didn't Jesus see what we needed to do? Why? Why wasn't it time to take the next step for us? We saw who he was. Some of the others agreed with me. John, though, said to let it go, that I was just stealing from the money anyway. Stealing? I just thought it was time for us to invest in us to make the movement happen. After that, I went to the chief priests. I know they'll continue to ask why I did it. Why would I betray Jesus? There isn't some easy answer. Maybe I was scared. All that talk of Jesus dying, instead of taking the power he had to raise an army, made me think we weren't going to achieve our freedom. Maybe I thought that if we just initiated some conflict, all of us around Jesus would rise up and take power by force. And maybe I was just angry, ready to give up, looking out for myself at that point. That the chief priest offered me 30 pieces of silver to set up a meeting. I took it. I said I'd do it. We were in Jerusalem for the Passover, and the time had come. That day, Jesus sent a couple of us ahead to prepare a room for us to eat, to celebrate. We sat around this big table, and we talked and we laughed and we shared stories, and it felt like it did when we first set out. Jesus began teaching, and then Jesus just stood up, and he walked back to the entryway, and he picked up the pitcher and the bowl that were there. We knew as he walked back toward the table what he had in mind. "I'm going to wash your feet," he said. No. It's the job of the servants, or at least the two disciples who set all this up. They should have taken care of that, but we'd already started. There wasn't any reason to wash our feet now. But Jesus, he wouldn't take no for an answer. In fact, he scolded Peter when Peter tried. Jesus worked his way around the table, and then he came to me. I could feel my heart beating in my chest, and my stomach came up into my lungs. "No," I thought. But I couldn't even find that one word like Peter had. I just sat there knowing. I pulled my foot back, and Jesus looked up, and I tried to avoid his gaze, but I just couldn't. Eventually, he looked right into my soul, and I knew, he knew. His eyes, that look, not pity, but deep, deep sadness and grief and compassion. What was he thinking? The love in those eyes, tenderness as he washed my feet. He knew. He knew what I'd done. He knew what I was going to do. And yet here we were. How could he show me that much compassion? When we sat back down to eat, Jesus, he looked around the circle, and we could tell each one of us had been moved by this experience, by what had happened. Everybody was silent. And then I saw that look in Jesus' eyes again. Sadness, grief, compassion, it was all there. We could all see it. And then he named what we knew. Truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me. Everyone looked around and said, surely you don't mean me. Even I said it. I said it just like everyone else. You have said so, Jesus said to me. And then Jesus said how hard it would be for him who would betray the Son of Man. It'd be better if he hadn't been born. Better if he hadn't been born. And then he looked right at me, and he took a piece of bread and he handed it to me, and he looked right into my soul again. No malice, no anger, just compassion. Compassion I didn't deserve. I had to go. I just had to go. I stood up, and Jesus said, what you're about to do, do quickly. I don't think any of the others really comprehended what they just experienced, because they didn't come after me. I think in that moment, I wish they had. I wish they'd stopped me. I walked slowly at first, thinking maybe somebody would have understood and come after me, but they didn't. It couldn't be stopped now. I went to a gathering of the chief priests and elders and joined a crowd of armed with swords and clubs, and we went to the garden. There I was to kiss Jesus, and they'd know it was him. It was an armed crowd. I know they won't believe me now, but kissing Jesus was the only option. It was the only way to protect the other disciples. Keep them from being attacked too. Greetings, Rabbi. That's what I said as I kissed him. An act of betrayal, a kiss. They seized him. Took him away. And for just a moment, I thought maybe this was the uprising that I dreamed of. It would happen now. One of the disciples grabbed a sword and pulled it out, but Jesus stopped him right away and said, this isn't the way. It was over. My life would be defined by this moment. Betrayer, traitor, sinner. I was wrong. You see, the temptation from Satan was to make the story about me, my power, my role, my place, my belief in how this should go. I thought I was right. I thought I knew what the world needed, and I was going to help make it happen. And while I was thinking that my way was the right way, I lost sight of Jesus right in front of me. I lost sight of what mattered most. I thought it was about power and glory. But it was about relationships. Jesus invited me to follow, even to turn back. And I gave in to the temptation. Betrayer, traitor, fool. Those are the words that will follow me. They're right. And I just hope when they tell my story, they'll include that moment when Jesus washed my feet. They'll include that moment of compassion. Forgiveness.